Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening, or whatever time it is, wherever you are, whenever you are. Thank you one and all for being with us and spending some time hanging out with us. My guest tonight is, well, it's not tonight for her, we'll talk about that, is Carmel Nyland, and she's in Australia. So it's 9 o'clock on Wednesday where I am, but it's Friday at 1 p.m. where she is, which is kind of fun. But we'll talk more after tonight's metaphysical musing. And something came up, showed up again online that I've seen over and over again, which is a story about the Inuit elders, the tribal elders near the Arctic Circle, talking about how the North Pole is shifting. And of course, they can't use compasses because they're so close to the North Pole. So they do everything by the stars and where the sun and the moon are, and everything is in different places and has been now for years. I've seen that article come by for probably 5 or 10 years now. And I started noticing that where I was living, the sun was coming up and setting between different buildings than it had been a year before. So it's getting pretty obvious. And the conversation that happened online was fascinating because somebody said, well, you know, NASA says that it's really being caused by climate change. What's happening is that because the water on the planet and the ice on the planet is shifting to new locations, the planet is off balance, and that's what's causing the pole shift. And it's a fascinating process, and I don't know which piece of that story, the scientific piece or the spiritual elders piece, is the cause and which one is the result. And maybe it's a little bit of both. But here we are at a time on this planet where, in a very powerful and dramatic way, the poles are shifting. North Pole is heading towards Russia at the moment. And I also saw something that said there are electromagnetic changes which are in effect creating an east and west pole. So it's not just the north and south pole, but there is now polarity happening in the oceans in two places. And what that portends, what that is a precursor for, is a pole shift, which is something that happens every, I don't know how many thousand years, but the north and south poles swap, and suddenly the polarity of the planet is switched. Does this matter, and why am I talking about it? Because there will be subtle changes in all kinds of things. And if you know, this is another piece to that puzzle that we talk about a lot. You have an idea of just how much change is going on. There's something called the Schumann resonance, which is the frequency that the planet vibrates at. And that has been stable for a very, very long time at 7-point-something megahertz. It's now over 40 megahertz. I don't know exactly what that's doing. I don't know that anybody really understands what it's doing to all kinds of things, including human bodies. But that is an incredible shift in frequency of one of the major aspects of the planet that's been stable for a long time. So all kinds of things are changing. If you're feeling a little bit off balance and a little rickety around the joints and things are not quite right and you're wondering what's going on, it's happening to everybody and the whole planet is changing. So here we are in the middle of one of the very big changes on the planet. And we'll see how it unfolds, won't we? So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we're going to have some fun with tonight's guest, Carmel Nyland, who is where in Australia?
I'm in Sydney.
That's
the capital city of a large East Coast state.
And most people don't realize how big Australia is, because Australia is bigger than the United States.
That's right. And the state I'm in is three times the size of Texas.
Yep. Yep.
So, this is big country.
And I'm always amused that I have a friend in Brisbane, or as you guys say, Brizzy. And we mapped it out at one point, and we were almost exactly on opposite sides of the planet.
Yes.
Could not be further away from each other if we tried.
I know that. But you see, there's one thing about Aussies and about Yanks, and that is our hearts beat to the same rhythm, whatever the frequency of the earth is. We come from the same kind of background as you. We have the same philosophies that you. We share your heroes, and we only wish we could vote in your elections.
Yeah, that would have helped. Yeah, I've always enjoyed Aussies, and although there's a difference in frequency with some people from down there that's really stunning. I look at their energy and it's just different from anybody up here.
Very, very interesting. Are you speaking about Aboriginal Australians?
No, this was not an average person. This was a healer.
No, Aboriginal Australians.
No. This was a white Australian.
Okay.
I have not, that I know of, met any Aboriginals, and I would love to. And I'm sure their energy is dramatically different from anybody up here.
It is dramatically different. And it sometimes it is miles wide and miles long in remarkable colors.
Right.
So that you know they're coming long before they actually come into view, into physical view. They're in spiritual view. And I imagine with our large spaces, it works well. We have now firmly established scientifically, through radiocarbon dating, the drawings in Western Australia as 50,000 years old, and they include the first drawing of a human being that go into historical record. So against that background, many of us Aussies, despite our blunt way of talking, have a deep spiritual connection with our land and with our First Peoples. And I would think we share that with you.
Yes, absolutely. And the friend I was mentioning takes off for the outback with her camper for several months at a time. And, you know, I she'll be out of touch all that time, and then she shows up on Skype or by email again. They're like, "Oh, you're back. Let's talk." Mm-hmm. So she can't be in the city and around lots of electromagnetic stuff for very long before she starts to hurt, and she's got to get away from it.
Yes, you'll notice that most Australians of my generation have a place on the coast or a place on the mountains. So for us, place on the mountains. And this provides the release, and it allows writing like I do with metaphysical frequencies in it and levels to it to be clearer realized in that environment.
I understand. You have a quiet space. That's wonderful. So what I always ask my guests is, well, first of all, tell us a little bit about your journey, your walkabout, you know, how did you wind up here? And then you have this book that's coming out called A Darker Magic This Way Comes, and it's a fascinating topic, so I want to hear more about that. But you know, how did you wind up doing all this?
Well, let's start in upstate New York. I was in upstate New York teaching at DeWitt Junior High School. And there I was, and there I experienced the tumultuous change that was sweeping America in about 1968 through to about 1974, some of it coming straight onto the Cornell campus. That radicalized my thinking in the sense that I'd spent some time. I went to graduate school at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, and that gave me a chance to work as a volunteer in the primary campaign of Robert Kennedy. And so I experienced his death, Martin Luther King's death, the first man on the moon. I had my hand held by Walter Cronkite throughout all of this. And I changed. As a human being, I changed. And my students also helped with me in that changing process. They were bright kids, and many of them were black kids. Some of them were literally, some of them were mountain people, and their points of view, which were expressed in wonderful language in the classroom, the kind of language you'd never hear on radio. they taught me to swear. They taught me to open my heart. They taught me to think about life differently. And they were into something strange. They were already into something strange. They were thoroughly interested in things that were unseen. And their favorite, I think right throughout the school, the favorite story was the telltale heart, something which suggests something other than what the very rational kind of university town was into. So from that, I went on. I came back to Australia with my American-born son and my husband. And I went in to work for the government as the first advisor on women's issues to the premier or the governor of the state. And then I took over the Human Rights Agency and I ran that. I also took the first in the world sexual harassment case. So that was before it came up before the Civil Rights Commission in the United States. From that, I spent about five years trying to search to find out who I was. So I've meditated on mountaintops. I've been to India. I've done the kinds of things one does when one's drastically kind of searching, who am I, why am I here? There must be something more than cases of sexual harassment and cases of racial harassment as well. And then I decided to take a job running not a human rights agency, but a child protection agency, an agency about disability services. And that was honestly a recipe for disaster, because what has come out now through various inquiries about what was going on, this was in the early turn of this century and everything was hidden. And not only was it hidden, there were laws that prevented people running these agencies from speaking about the cases. So you could never explain this ballooning statistics of all of these people claiming child abuse. But now, once we've had inquiries and it's come out in the open nearly 15 years later, we can explain it.
Right.
Having left that, I started writing. I wrote a 1,000-page book, which was purely metaphysical. I had to get it out of my system. And then I decided to do something completely different. Around me was a man, and this is every girl's dream. He was 16. He was definitely a teenager. And sometimes he'd appear in a coat that was made of white feathers, swan's feathers, with a brass or a gold kind of breastplate. It was circular near his neck. And other times he would come dressed like a Roman centurion with feathers in a helmet. I got to know this being as Merlin. And he had a story to tell. And his story was the story of how to reach young people alive today. And he also wanted to talk about his reincarnational background. Why did he create the Arthurian legend and how did he do it? And he could never reveal all his secrets in the past because the whole beauty of the Arthurian legend is it's like half-written sentences. You just get a glimpse and then he leaves it, the story, for other people to fill in. And it's one of the most written about stories of all time, in outside biblical stories, that is, and outside Shakespearean stories. But it's there. You think you've got it and it slips away. And of course, it involves marvelous stories like the Grail, and it leads to the putting of women on a pedestal with the whole chivalric movement came from it. So it's an amazing place to go fishing. And that's what I did. And that's led to the novel that I've written.
That's the book that's coming out now.
Yes.
The Darker Magic. Yes. Well, that's fascinating. So you have an ongoing conversation with the consciousness of Merlin.
Correct.
To unfold the story, which is an amazing thing. So tell us a little bit about the book and the story.
Well, I think the first thing is Merlin. Merlin speaks with a Welsh accent. And Merlin is something you think you know, and then he slides away. He weaves magic. He engineers battles. He remembers the future. He toys all the time with the laws of nature. He plays with time. He flies through the air. He calls himself a smith of strangeness. And I think it's a wonderful phrase, and it sums him up completely.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is when he impacts on our world, which is inquiring and scientific, just like the introduction that you did, where you gave homage to the Inuit understanding, but at the same time you then started talking in megahertz. So we are a combination of the mystical, but at the same time the highly theoretical, how do you do it, how does it work, kind of society. And particularly we share as Australians something with you, that we're highly inventive and we create things that you never thought were able to be created. So he wanted to tell the story again, and he wanted to tell it answering some of the things that he left dangling before, like what was the Grail really about, or why would he come back now? I mean, and that was one of the things I was kept putting to him. I mean, what's the purpose now? You could have done this 100 years ago, 300 years ago, why now? Now, to answer that question, we have to pose another question. One of the most common ways of describing King Arthur is to say the once and future king.
Mm-hmm.
Some people figured, you know, he had come back as Winston Churchill at the to help England through the Second World War. But I actually believe that Winston Churchill was Aristotle. He wasn't. He wasn't King Arthur.
Interesting.
King Arthur. Why would King Arthur be coming back? Why would he need to come back? And the answer is, Great Britain is under attack. It's under attack from not only physical risk, but the risk of its values being changed and people who are, what we call some of them terrorists. And it is believed that it's time for King Arthur to come back. So if we start then, we've got Merlin, we have a potential Arthur coming back. How do we get Else into the today's age? Well, there is a girl and she lives in Devon, which was very close to where Merlin was born. And she's going to be connected with this whole thing in some way. She doesn't know what she's supposed to do. Merlin does, but he doesn't tell us immediately. In this book, he wants to share long-buried secrets. And one of them is how he fell in love with a fairy, or fairy from another world, and her name was Amelia. And he saw her on Dartmoor dancing with his foxes. The Amelia who lives in Dartmoor in our time was operating in spaces where Merlin also operated, and he had been asked to come here and protect her. Why? Because she's the chosen one. And what does that mean? She's got to find out. And that's essentially what the story's about. But think of Merlin not like Dumbledore. Think of him as being hot, really hot. He looks more like Colin Firth, is it, who played Mr. Darcy, a combination of him and George Clooney, the Celtic
look. Interesting. Yep.
And so he's very hot, and he has an intellect like Leonardo da Vinci, but his difference is he has a wand in his hand. Right. So he's got the scientific kind of mind of Leonardo, but he's got the mystical kind of mind like one of the great magicians, for example, of the Bible, like Aaron, for example, with a staff of ebony. And his staff he can use to fly with. Because of his scientific background, he can sit down with kids and explain how he does it, which is even more interesting.
Which sounds absolutely fascinating. We're going to be going to a break soon. I want to make sure people know where to find you online. What's your website?
A Darker Magic This Way Comes .com.au.
And make sure that you include the .au, which will get you to Australia on the internet. A lot of people don't know those little additional extensions for the various countries.
Yes.
So when we get back, I want to hear a lot more about your experience with all this and the story, and also whatever you're offering and when the book's going to come out.
So
that we can get people ready for this and they'll know where they can get a hold of it. So we will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest tonight is Carmel Nyland from Australia, and her book is A Darker Magic This Way Comes. You're listening to The Farkas Files on Empower Radio, and don't go nowhere because there's a lot more to come.
Listening to Empower Radio, an entire radio station devoted to your personal development, expanding your conscious awareness, and empowering positive change. Meet our hosts and listen online at empowerradio.com, on iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Radio, or iTunes, or download the Empower Radio app for your smartphone or tablet. It's free in the App Store, and it lets you listen to our shows and podcasts on demand. Empowering people, empowering change. Empower Radio, online at empowerradio.com.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, in math, I learned that I'm ugly and useless.
I'm trash.
And in gym,
in biology,
I learned that I'm pathetic
that I'm fat
and a joke.
And stupid.
In history,
today,
I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends.
In biology,
in English, I learned that I make people sick.
And
at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell.
And
in chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid.
In English,
and in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Maria Menounos coming to you with some urgent news impacting families across America. Studies reveal that 1 in 5 children in America are struggling with hunger. That's nearly 16 million children who may not know where they're getting their next meal or if it's even coming at all. These kids need help, and they need it now. But the good news is there's more than enough healthy food in this country to ensure that no one ever goes hungry again. And that's where the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks steps into the picture. They're out there every day collecting surplus food and helping to get it to children and families facing hunger. But they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg roll showed up, like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Positively uplifting. This is Empower Radio.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest tonight, Carmel Nyland, who's joining us from Sydney, Australia, which is always so cool. Talking to someone on the other side of the planet who's there tomorrow, because it's Friday there. Carmel, one of my standard jokes is I know that the world's not going to end tomorrow because it's already tomorrow in Australia. So
I think that's a great joke. But it's not very funny.
So wait a minute. How can it be a great joke and not be funny?
Because life is paradoxes, isn't it?
It's all paradoxes. All paradoxes. And people keep trying to make it linear and sensible.
And it isn't.
And they're very upset when it isn't. So you were talking about your conversations and relationship with Merlin and what he's like.
and some of the other people in his experience. Tell us some more about that and how the story unfolds in the book.
Okay. Well, if a person of the light and magic and intellect of Merlin is going to incarnate and is going to incarnate for 120 years, then there is a counterbalance to a Merlin. There is the darkness that also will exist. Now, the darkness has two names in this book. One name is Moloch. Moloch is spelled M-O-L-O-C-H. And Moloch is the name in Hebrew for the god Baal, which is spelled B-A-A-L.
Mm-hmm.
Morgana, on the other hand, Morgana is well known in Celtic legends, and she shapeshifts. Sometimes she seems very good and inspiring, so that people who have read, for example, The Mists of Avalon, she is a priestess, and she's a priestess of goodness. But in my book, she's vile. She's a priestess of darkness. She's vile, almost unbelievably vile. And the only hint I can give you as to how vile this woman is to say that I spent 5 years running a child protection agency. So that might give you some idea of the kind of darkness that's in this woman.
Right.
The two of them are out to prevent the young woman who Merlin sees in our time, and her name's Emily, from incarnating or coming into their time, because they've worked out what her purpose is, and their job is to prevent her and to do whatever they can to possibly prevent her. So this is a highly compacted story. It only the elapsed time of it is only something like 3 days. So it moves extremely fast. And it's told with two voices. It's told with Merlin's voice, and therefore the language is a little stilted, but at other times it's quite poetic because it's his voice. And then it's also told in a modern contemporary voice. So that's the voice of Emily and her friends. Now, she lives in Exeter in England, which is in the area of Devon. And her mum is an archaeologist. Her dad is Moonlights is a singer. He is an academic at the university, and he is an expert in classical languages. So he speaks classical Greek. You'd think that'd be pretty boring, but he isn't. He's kind of a hip guy. Her mother's the one who's a bit boring. She happens to speak Welsh, which is helpful to the plot. And Merlin takes one look at her, and his soul changes colour. He's supposed to protect her. He's not supposed to fall in love with her. But because Valentine's Day was this week, it's a great love story. It's a great love story, but it's because it's an impossible love story. It should end in grief, and it almost does. So we've got darkness. We've got people who live in Merlin's time, and they include his father. His father is a dux. That's not dux of the school. That's dux in the way that Latin is spoken. He was a man who ran a whole series of legions in the part of on the German border, Germanican border, where he was trying to stop the invaders coming in to the Roman land. So his name is Marcus, and he's known by the name as Bruto. And Bruto can stand for whatever you think it is, but you don't mess with this guy. His mother, Ingran, is an archdruid, and she is capable of amazing magic. So we've got some wonderfully strong female characters, but we've also got a goddess. Now, this goddess is Arahnahot, which we'll call Arana because it's easier to say, or Ariana. And she is part of Welsh legend. She's the spinner. She's the spider woman. And she's able to kind of lurk in corners unseen and hear everything that's going on. She's able to spin tails. She's able to spin beautiful clothes. And she can move around the world very, very quickly. So we've got a goddess. We've got a dark force in Moloch. And Moloch has been chasing Merlin for as long as he's alive, and he's only 16 in this book. And I say in this book because Merlin will live 120 years, a good diet I would recommend, and he will occupy five books when it's finished. His fight with
You're going to be busy. You're going to be busy for a while with this.
I am. And I'm just working on the second book now. So I've got to be careful that I remain in the first book and not go into the second.
And when is the book going to come out?
The book's available now.
Oh, great. Okay.
The best way of getting it is on Amazon.
Sure.
So if you just go to A Darker Magic This Way Comes, or type in my name, Carmel Niland, which is spelled N-I-L-A-N-D, that will take you to where you can purchase it there. It's available in two forms. It's available in hard copy, and it's also available in Kindle. In hard copy, it is about $19.99. And the Kindle copy is whatever Kindle copies are. They're about $5 or $6, I think.
Right.
So we've kept it as it's a big book. It's well over 500 pages. So it's you're going to have to bear with that. But everybody's used to bigger books now, aren't they? And when you've got a big story, a story that's going to go over five novels, you need a lot of pages.
Well, I'm very excited that you have this whole series already in mind and love to hear about them as they unfold. So I hope you'll come back and tell us more.
I will, David. That's for sure.
So I'm trying to keep the story straight. Merlin is incarnating. He's fascinated with Amelia, and there are dark forces that are keeping them apart, which sounds Shakespearean, actually.
Well, it's funny you say that, because sometimes Merlin speaks unseen in my head, and the rest of the time, it is the man who wrote Shakespeare talks. And Merlin's reincarnational background is really interesting. I won't go into who he was before, but who he is in the future includes Nikola Tesla, Copernicus, and the person who wrote Shakespeare. So you can imagine that the person who wrote Shakespeare is often around making suggestions, and I'm just writing at the moment, and I'm doing a wedding, and I won't say which wedding, but he wants Titania in it, and he wants the King of the Fairies there too, because, as you know, Shakespeare doesn't like a wedding unless there's fairies in it. So here they are.
Well, if you're telling a story like that set in that location, you've got to have fairies and maybe elves.
Yeah. Yes. And also a very clear understanding of the way of the world of nature. Merlin could communicate with not only animals, not only birds, and he had one on each shoulder. One was a Merlin and one was a jackdaw, which we don't have in Australia and I don't think you have in America. Do you have jackdaws there?
I'm not sure. No, they're
black and they've got a kind of a gray top. And they have amazing silver eyes, which is unusual in a bird. You usually see it in a fish. But the jackdaw has the eye that is most like the human eye. So Merlin uses it. He goes into this bird, and then if he has to see what's going on in the next valley or, you know, a couple of miles away, then he can send his jackdaw and his consciousness goes with him. He uses the jackdaw eyes to see what's going on and then he returns. He works with nature all the time. He works with thunderstorms. He works with trees. If he needs to get a message out, if he was a Native American, he would use a drum. And they used drums in his time and they used smoke in the same way as Native Americans do. Mm. But what he would do is he would send the message through the network of trees that covered the whole of America. Mm-hmm. And in his world, all trees are connected through the fibrous roots that they share. And they may share them also not only with trees but with bushes or vegetables even, but using this kind of these tendrils that are underground, he can quickly get a message there, much the same way as our net works above ground. Right. But it's a natural way, so he taps into the forces of nature. He can create lightning. He can fly. He can navigate between worlds. He is one amazing creature. And just as well, he's coming back. So any day we should be seeing Merlin emerging somewhere in our world in real time, in flesh and blood.
Wow. So please be sure to tell me when that happens.
Yes. I hope he isn't called Merlin. His proper name, his Latin name is Ambrosius Marcus, but what name he's coming back with, I don't know. And there's someone else I want to tell you about. The father of Arthur, or Arturus as he's called, is Uta Pendragon. His first name is spelled Uther. And you'll see him and many of these characters in a movie that's about to be released in America. It's called King Arthur and the Legend of the Sword. Mm. And it's a Guy Ritchie movie. And Uta is tall and thin and red-haired. And I was thinking that he would be a minor-ish character. But honestly, he has such energy and he leaps off the page. You know, whenever I'm writing about him, he literally leaps off the page and he's there. He's good looking, but not good looking like Merlin, I might add. But talk about energy and wit and verve and style, and he can sing and he can fight. He's an amazing man, and as you would expect, that an amazing man would be selected to be the father of Arthur. And one of the themes of the next book is the theme of fatherhood. Mm. What fatherhood means, what happens when you have a child you know is special, and how do you as a father cope with that?
Right.
Rather than compete with it.
Which is becoming more commonplace with the indigo and crystal children now.
Where, yes, it is.
You know, the kids show up and you know that there's something different about them, and then it's learning how to be the best parent for this unusual child.
That's right. We've got a few in our family.
Mm-hmm.
They would be my grandchildren, and I know how different they are. Mm-hmm. Even though their fathers were special, one of whom was born in America, but as is often the case in Australia, your children kind of marry Italian-born or Quebecois in the case of one of my sons. So we've got a marvellous multicultural melting pot like you have, but the Indigo children are in that. My son asked his son, Olivier, to count to 20. And he said, and my son said, one. And Olivier, who is two, counted to 20 in French. Because why not?
Love it.
Yes, that's an Indigo child. Yes. Anyway, it's been great talking. I could talk all day, and you've got other things to do.
Well, we have a few more minutes, so you're already working on the second book. This book is out, so you're at a very exciting time in this whole process, and hopefully it will be very lucrative. It's always wonderful when a book launches.
My book is not a Harry Potter book. It's really for those who are too old for Harry Potter and too young for Game of Thrones. You know, it's in the middle. And the other thing is, it essentially assumes that the reader is intelligent. And that means that it operates on about seven levels simultaneously. So if you are, for example, a 12-year-old and you're reading this book, you'll get something from it. You'll enjoy the fairies, you'll enjoy the movement, you'll enjoy the color, you'll enjoy the whole mystical, magical world.
Right.
But if you are 18, you'll enjoy the love story. But you'll also enjoy the science, because Merlin is a marvelous scientist, and he wants to explain to you, he wants to tell you how he can transverse time. He wants to tell you how he can fly through the air. He wants to tell you how he can lift stones with his staff. He wants to explain that to you. So I've got to try and keep it simple, but he's just as interested in letting you know his secrets, his science, as he is in telling the story.
Right.
So
it sounds absolutely incredible. I just got to, you know, crack it open and take a quick look, but it sounds like an absolutely wonderful story. And I'm looking forward to hearing how the whole series unfolds. It's always very exciting to hear people that basically are listening to the stuff that they're writing, that the book is being written and you're a scribe for it.
Also
that have a very different experience of life than most people think is possible. Since I'm one of those people too, and it's always fun to meet other people, but we're all doing it differently. So that's very exciting. I've been doing this show for 6 years and I've been interviewing hundreds of people, and each person is fascinating with a different experience of all of this atypical reality. And I think that's part of what people listen to the show for.
Well, I think that we everywhere in the world have to be very grateful to America, because your impassioned embracing of science in your going to the moon, but at the same time, your embrace of the way of freedom of expression, freedom of thought, scientific inquiry, your pursuit, not only of religious freedom, but the widest possible definition of that. I mean, I believe in God. I was brought up a Catholic. I'd still be a practicing Catholic. I am a practicing Catholic. But the kind of thinking that I can share with my colleagues who think like me, Jewish, agnostic, they are from as many different kinds of approaches to life, including Buddhism, that you can possibly imagine. And the celebration of that and the recognition and the freedom of that in the United States allows people to express themselves and not be regarded as dingbats and pilloried for it.
Well, and hopefully we'll continue. We're going through our strange transition, but that's a story we can't get into. We are coming to the end of our time. Tell people again where they can find you.
They can find me on A Darker Magic This Way Comes. And that is available on Facebook. And it's also available on Amazon. And you can follow me on Facebook. And you can go on Amazon and purchase it. And it's all linked. And there is Twitter, and there is Instagram, and there is a whole lot.
And I just want to make sure people remember that the website is adarkermagicthiswaycomes.com.au because you're in Australia.
That's right.
So, well, this has been great fun. Just great fun. And I'm always tickled to hear an Australian accent. As I told you, I have a dear friend. I've learned to really enjoy the accent, and it always tickles me that we're on opposite sides of the planet and a day apart. It's so strange.
Yes, it is.
Strange and wonderful.
You were founded by the second sons of the wealthy aristocracy. We were founded by the poor sons of convicts. So we're a working class nation, and with a different kind of philosophy of egalitarianism to yours. But other than that, we share a hell of a lot. We're invented both at the same time.
Right.
We both did appalling things to our indigenous people.
Yeah, we did.
Share a language approximately.
I hate to cut you off, but we are at the end of our time. My guest tonight is Carmel Nyland. She's the author of A Darker Magic, This Way Comes, which is available on Amazon and everywhere else. And thank you so much for joining us from Sydney, Australia. This has been great fun.
You're welcome, David. Hope to do it again sometime.
Love to do that. Let me know when the book comes out.
Bye-bye.
When the second book comes out. And if you happen to get curious about who's this guy, David, and what in the world does he do? You can find all of that information at househealing.com. And there's every way, every technology to get in touch with me, including a link to schedule a 20-minute free phone conversation to take a look at a person, place, situation, business, whatever, and assess whether my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, that's at thefarkasfiles.com. The whole archive is there, and you can listen from there, but you can also listen from the Empower Radio app, which you can get in the App Store and on almost every streaming media outlet. TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes podcasts. And so if you just plug in Empower Radio or Farkas Files into your whatever search engine you use, you will find us everywhere. And it's exciting that the technology has improved so much that people can listen pretty much anywhere and anytime at your convenience. So thank you so much for hanging out with me. Thank you, one and all, for being here, wherever you are, whenever you are. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a wonderful week. We'll be right back.